roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
From the fight capital of the world, inside our beautiful home in Las Vegas, it's the MMA Junkie Radio Show, the only show that matters. And I'm your host, Gorgeous George. With me, as always, is the devious and dastardly Goz. Our ace co-host Goz, how was your weekend? What'd you think of the fights? What do you think of the fights that are coming up? It's kind of nice to keep saying that as this MMA world just keeps turning and turning. It's a big old cycle.
Yeah, no, fights were very exciting this weekend. It was a lot of fun. And then we got another card coming up, but then after that, a little bit of break, and then it kind of gets crazy with Fight Island.
Big time. You know, belated Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. We were able to chat with ours. He's in California. We're in Las Vegas, but we do have our mom out here. Hopefully you all are staying safe. I know it's some really, really tough times out there, and it hasn't stopped for anybody. So stay strong, people. Let's talk some MMA. On today's show, we're going to discuss the results from UFC on ESPN 11. Plus, we'll preview the upcoming card headlined by Dan Hooker and Dustin Poirier. That's on Saturday. That one's called UFC on ESPN 12. I mean, pretty good times for the UFC, man. They're on the leader, folks. Prime time on Saturdays, so good for them. Of course, we'll discuss the latest MMA news, lots of controversy stemming from UFC on ESPN 11, Blades versus Volkov. And, yeah, we'll touch on all the latest news nuggets as well. So buckle up, folks. Here we go. It's the MMA Junkie Radio Show, early Monday, June 22nd.
The Counter, an NFL podcast from USA Today Sports. Featuring For the Win's Steven Ruiz and Chris Corman.
I know people are like just assuming that this is an upgrade at the quarterback position, but I don't think we could say that for a fact. I'd say it's a downgrade.
He never really had game-to-game impact, just coming off the edge and destroying people that we thought when we saw his athleticism in college and at the combine. And
The Counter, diving deeper into the NFL with advanced stats, film study, and expert guests. This is The Counter.
Listen and subscribe to The Counter on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
I almost feel, Goz, like we could spend a half hour just on Austin Hubbard versus Max Roscoff. He's got a tricky last name. Now I'm saying Mash. However, let me just go through the results and then we'll circle back. Austin Hubbard defeated Max Roscoff. In between rounds 2 and 3, there was a TKO retirement, they call it. Max Roscoff decided not to go out for the third round. Lauren Murphy defeated Roxanne Modafferi. But rather impressive performance. She got all the judges' scorecards, including two 30-27s. Justin Jaynes defeated Frank Camacho. Kind of an upset there. First round TKO stoppage. Jillian Robertson defeated Courtney Casey. She actually submitted her towards the end of round 3. Marc-Andre Barriot defeated Oscar Piojeta. Piojota? I was trying to listen to what John Anik said. I think I got it close. TKO stoppage there in round 2. Tisha Torres defeated Brianna Van Buren. Very impressive. Huge upset. Not massively. I gotta be careful when I use the word huge, because huge would be Sarah versus GSP. Everyone I talked to was taking Van Buren. Torres was coming off a 4-fight losing streak. Van Buren was the favorite. And Torres won 30-27. So there you go. That was a big flip-flop from what a lot of people were expecting, including yours truly. Bobby Green defeated Clay Guida. He had a 30-27 and 2-29-28. But that one was closer than the other ones. Jim Miller defeated Roosevelt Roberts rather quickly, man. He submitted him. He got him on the armbar. In round 1, Bilal Muhammad. And that was the beginning, by the way, of the main card. They were all on ESPN and ESPN+. So it was a simulcast. And so now we get to the main card where Miller did beat Roberts, as I stated. Bilal Muhammad defeated Lyman Good via unanimous decision. Lyman Good was apologizing on social media. He wanted to win one for his late father. 29-28, 29-28, 29-28. He sounded really disappointed. But I'll tell you one thing, man. He fought all right. Like, that one went down to the end, in my opinion. Don't hang your head too low. And especially because this guy came off COVID. Remember, we're going to keep an extra eye on him. Raquel Pennington defeated Marion Renault, 30-27, 29-28. Josh Emmett defeated Shane Burgos. Man, if not for Joanna versus Zhang Wei Li, this one would be talked about for fights of the year. I mean, it was violent, folks. Curtis Blaze defeated Alexander Volkov, 49-46, 48-47, 48-46. Three different scores, pretty much domination. I don't think I saw 48-47, but we'll definitely spend some time on that one as well. The bonuses went to Burgos and Emmett, no shocker there. Performance of the Knights, Miller and Justin James. How about the fact that that small cage isn't producing as many finishes as decisions, you know, like that ratio towards the decisions, because we had seven decisions and four finishes. So, yeah, way more fights going to the judges than we thought. But anyway, goes, all right, I even got the payouts here, man. I can keep going, but let's circle back. I know we're going to spend some time on it, on spinning back click at the very bottom with Roshkoff and Hubbard and Blades versus Volkov. So we're not going to have as much time to talk over there. Let's spend some time talking about it here. What'd you think of Hubbard versus Roshkoff and how it ended?
I think depending on how you look at it, I think both guys have good cases. I see that social media is a little divided on it. It's very tough to say what a relationship is between a fighter and their coach. And in this particular instance, if you look at what Robert Drysdale did, I think that's his job. His job is to motivate the fighter. And I think that's what he did. At the very end, he called it. But a lot of people wanted to compare it to kind of like fighters wanting to, or corners wanting to throw in the towel on Tony Ferguson, on Anthony Smith. I don't think you can compare it to that. In this situation, you didn't have a fighter that was like, he wasn't injured. He was just hurt. And I think that's where you kind of lean on Robert Drysdale to know that relationship with his fighter. So if you think about it, the guy lives with him, you know, like he knows him very, very well. And I think he was just trying to motivate Max to come out and do something. And he pushed it as far as he could to the end of the minute. And when that didn't happen, the fight was called. But we're not really going to know the ramifications of all this on Max's career until later, until we see what happens. I mean, dude took the fight on 5 days' notice. Let's see what he's like when he gets a full camp. If he turns it around, then I think we all look at it and say, maybe Max made the right decision. There's no sense in just walking out there just to get blitzed just so that you look tough. And if he doesn't, then maybe you look back and point on that at that and say, wow, maybe that was something that he lost his opportunity.
Mm-hmm. And you said it specifically at the end that Robert did utter the words, we're calling it. You saw that too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because a lot of people were stating that it took the Nevada State Athletic Commission. I forget his name. Charvez is his name, right? Or something like that.
Something like that.
Big black gentleman. He's been around for a long time. He was watching the corner and he was noting that the fighter did not want to come out and the coach was trying to motivate him to come out. I wouldn't say force him. He was trying to motivate him. Like, he didn't wave off the ref or the official and say he's going out, you know, and you know, push everyone back into place. I don't mind what he did. He had 60 seconds to get him to breathe because he was basically, they were talking about it because Max wanted out from the minute the round ended until he sat down and Robert was taking his time trying to convince him that he should keep going, but also, hey, give me a couple breaths, sit down, you know, all that. You have 1 minute to do all that. At the very end, Robert and Max both said, we call it, you know. So he did, you know, agree with his fighter. His fighter was specifically asked, you know, just in case. So good reffing on Mark Smith's part. I, the commission official did a great job, too, spotting that. No sense in sending someone out there who realistically doesn't want to go out. But let's dissect that now. Should he have gone out? Well, what Robert was telling him, get the takedown and lay on top of him, something like that. I was telling Goes the same thing. Get an early takedown, just ride the guy. Because if he took round one, he definitely didn't take round two. But if he took round one, he might be able to get out of there at 29-28. 15 minutes of experience in the UFC. The jitters are, at least the worst jitters I think you're ever going to get, might be in your rearview mirror. You get a win. You get your win bonus. And that's it. And no one's talking about you on Monday, at least in regards to, you know, quitting on the stool or however you want to call it, electing not to continue. And so I have no problem with it. And the fact that the Nevada State Athletic Commission is going to open an investigation, like on the one hand, I want to be one of those media folks that goes, what's this guy thinking? What are they thinking over there? You know, like, you're crazy and just come in over the top. Look, I guess I thought about it, and it's their job to just make sure that everything's on the up and up. Isn't that what we want, folks, is for that those types of situations to get reviewed? But I think what will happen is Bob Bennett and his team will review it, kind of talk it out like Goes and I were, probably speak with both individuals or maybe everyone involved, type up some sort of a report so that everyone's covered. But I don't think that's going to stop them from licensing Robert Drysdale to corner in the future. I don't think it was a travesty. I saw a lot of media kind of like, just over the top. Like, if you think he should have gone out there, then you're what's wrong with the sport. I mean, relax. And then I heard Dana say, if you're ridiculing this young man, fuck you. He actually said that. You know what I say to all them? He goes, fuck them. No one's ridiculing them. We're just talking about it and questioning it. I think I saw a couple over the tops like, he's a quitter. And I thought, well, look, again, everyone's entitled to their opinion. And what you say you're responsible for, you know, it's going to live on Twitter forever, at least unless you delete it and someone doesn't screen grab it. But either way, it was such a mess seeing all that. Again, I had no problem with Robert pushing him to the end. I think what Robert was telling him was a couple things. One was, you're going to find out a lot about yourself. This is what we've been training. Like you said, Goes, I'm sure they've shared meals together. They've probably shared conversations together. They've probably envisioned how the career is going to go. You know, there's been a lot of promise for this kid. And I think he was probably trying to do his best in 60 seconds to tell him this might have some repercussions. In fact, remember, some of these guys like Justin James, Max Roshkoff, a few of the others that you're seeing, that Anik and Brendan Fitzgerald and all them are saying, you know, they're kind of like late fill-ins. Christian Aguilera a week ago. Some of them may have been part of the summer series, the Dana White Contender Series. I think Nolan was saying that in one of his articles. And so they're pushing them because we need those bodies. And so a few of them may not get that second fight. Most of the time it's like, hey, did you go 0-2? Well, then you got to go get more wins. You're not ready. You know, here it might be different. They can cut you after one loss. So I think that's what Robert was trying to encapsulate in 60 seconds. Like, hey, this might live on for a while. Like, seriously, we're here. Get out there. Give me a takedown, or at least attempt at a takedown. And I think he couldn't say it. I think he said, the minute I see, you know, if there's a sloppy takedown or if this guy just drills you with something, then before he can even finish you off, unless it's a one-punch Mark Hunt walk-off, I will notify the commission, I'll throw in the towel, or I'll have the fight stopped. You know, but give me something in those first 30 seconds to a minute, because you never know, man. And all I kept thinking about, Goes, was all the different stories you've ever heard of or watched or read about. Shout out to Brian Salmon, who had us on his sports show on NBC last night here locally in Vegas. Did you catch that yet?
I haven't watched it yet, no.
Okay, in the...
I was in it, though.
Not in our spot, but prior to, he was discussing it with his team. And one of them is Amber Dixon, who a lot of people see covering the sport as well here locally. And she was stating that she spoke to Smitty, James Smitty. I forget his last name. It may just be Smith, actually. But do you remember that gentleman coming into our studio and talking boxing? He's a local Vegas writer, Smitty. Everybody, you know, respects him and everything. And she was discussing with, she was sharing this with the audience that she had been discussing with Smitty and that conversation. So I don't want to make it sound like I'm some boxing historian. I only heard this last night that apparently Muhammad Ali wanted to quit against Sonny Liston. Mm-hmm. You know, Roberto Duran did quit, you know, and he has shown regret because he knew that was a bad decision. He also knew he didn't have it. But you know, that was just because he was pretty much unprepared. And I guess they said he had a steak that didn't sit right, whatever. But either way, I've seen many specials where he looks back as at that moment, you know, and wishes he hadn't done that. Think about Misha Tate, who's getting, I don't want to say walloped, but, you know, she's decisively losing her fight against Holly Holm. She still goes out there and does what she needed to do, and that's to get the takedown to at least start something, and goes, all this was in round five. Again, a fight that's not going well while they're standing, you know, on their 2 feet, and she became a world champion. And wasn't there a Uriah Hall fight in Pittsburgh against, I think it was Christoph Jocko? And I remember
he took a beating at the beginning of it, I think.
I remember Eric Nixon keeping him in the game, you know what I mean? And him coming out. How about Colby Covington getting his jaw broken in round two or three and still going out there a couple times? Now, you stated this wasn't an injury, so we're pretty clear about that. We're not sending someone out with their eyeball hanging out or anything like that. The guy was just physically broken, mentally broken, emotionally broken, you know. We weren't sending someone out there that couldn't lift his two shoulders and therefore he was just going to get pieced up. And I think that's what Robert was trying to just give him in those 60 seconds. And I think that's what all well-intentioned other athletes or other media or other fans were saying. We've seen it, folks. It's happened, you know, and all that was trying to be communicated. And that's all we feel. We're not trying to send someone out there against a lion, you know, with no spear or anything like that. I know I just threw a lot at you, so maybe unpack it all, but you know, can you believe this is such a big story in either direction other than just, you know, what happened happened. But anyway,
I think I agree with pretty much almost everything you just said, except the only one difference I think is in those situations, Colby Covington, Misha Tate, like these are very experienced fighters.
Yeah.
And they're fighters that had the benefit of an entire camp to prepare. Right. And Max is a guy that came off 5 days. We don't know what kind of, he's usually in pretty good shape, but he didn't train for the opponent. And those days are usually made up of, how do I lose this weight? You know, it's mostly spent in the sauna trying to make sure you make weight for the fight. So it's not like you can go in there and all of a sudden build this cardio. So I've been there before where you're just exhausted. You know, you have nothing in there, but I wasn't getting punched while I was trying to do whatever I'm trying to do. If I'm trying to run 5 miles this time or something. So I can see how somebody could break in the situation and be scared of being posterized in front of the entire world. And he's young in his career. Like, you know, Misha, Colby, they've already set their careers.
They were also in title fights. Stakes were bigger.
Yeah. So a KO, I mean, we see like the way the fight game is now, you only have so many of those. So maybe the kid's just thinking, I'm not going to be on somebody else's poster just to look tough for everyone. And that's a lot to digest in between rounds. I think Robert did the best that he could with him. But now it's just kind of the ball's in Max's court. And I'm actually surprised that Dana White took the stance that he took, because I think so many times we see him sort of come at fighters. I think this is the one time where I was pretty surprised that he actually had the fighters back. And if you're Max, I think you feel good about that. But you have to capitalize on that too and really turn things around and show everybody that you're a different fighter than what we saw that night. And, you know, round one, he looked good. Like, he looked like a fighter that belonged there. And then I think that's when it just set in that he just was an underprepared fighter and it wasn't really his fault.
That said, he still has to work a lot on his striking.
Yeah.
The wrestling seems fine. The jiu-jitsu seems fine. The blending of the two, you know, he was going after different types of attacks. Leg lock attack, I believe, in the second round. And then the first round, he was going for his patented, you know, takedown, work to a dominant, get that rear naked choke. Excuse me, I thought I had a sneeze. But now I lost my train of thought. But anyway, what I did want to say was one of the first things I saw on Twitter was a tweet by Brett Okamoto from ESPN saying, and remember, you only have like 140 characters, what, 280 characters, something like that. He was saying that Dana had first said, hey, maybe this kid isn't ready. Maybe this just isn't for him. So when I saw that, I go, oh, he's fucked. You know what I mean? Like, he's not getting that second fight. But as you can see on MMA Junkie's YouTube page, youtube.com/MMA Junkie Video, the whole press conference is there. Like Go said, Dana White goes on to say, hey, look, if you're not ready, you're not ready. I have nothing against him going out there and electing not to continue or quit or however you want to categorize it. And so it looks like he will maybe at least have maybe the benefit of a second fight.
I think you absolutely have to give it to him just because of the look that it's going to give if he doesn't. Because there's a lot of people that just covered this on television that didn't really give you all of the pieces of the puzzle. So the way they portrayed things was Robert was like trying to feed him to the lions. Mm-hmm. And they didn't even mention the part that at the end he did actually stop the fight. Mm-hmm. So in other people's eyes, they're going to look at it as, well, the UFC just wants people to go out there and get jacked up. You know, I think they have no choice. They have to give him a second fight. It would look really bad.
Yeah. Well, I hope he gets one too with a full camp. Definitely, for sure. Look, he won his first five fights, and I think he finished them all. And that's why he had so much hype. But anyway, folks, that was just the first fight of the night. Lauren Murphy, good for her. You know, late resurgence in her career. Remember, she got a little pissed on that season of The Ultimate Fighter. And since then, she's done very well for herself. So you got to give her a shout out. Justin James also trains at Extreme Couture. He went out there and he started landing hooks on Camacho, who's a tough son of a bitch, man. And he didn't stop throwing them. You could just see Justin's face kind of like, what do I do? He's like, I'm happy and I'm reacting and woohoo. And he was processing it. It seemed like his reaction was like 3 seconds behind what had already physically happened. Like, he literally was just so intense, you know, didn't know where to run, what to say, but he was so excited. But he literally debuted on a few days' notice and got the win. So good for him. We see this guy at Extreme Couture all the time, too. He does his thing, and then I think he trains the kids. We usually see him on the way out. He's usually training the kids. He also played on the Extreme Couture team when we played them, Junkie Nation versus Extreme Couture in flag football. I remember him. I mentioned Mackie Patolo and Brad Tavares and Eric Nixick and Boston Salmon. So
Puna Soriano.
We had our hands full that day, folks. We had a lead, too. 1-0. All right. Jillian Rod. Well, you want to say anything about Justin James?
Well, I just thought what was surprising was he beat Camacho in Camacho fashion. It was That's what probably the game plan. You would say, dude, whatever you do, don't get involved in that type of fight with this guy. And he did. And he came out on the winning end.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Jillian Robertson defeated Courtney Casey. And so that's the second flyweight fight of the night. Because remember, Murphy beat Mota Ferry. These are all the ladies that are angling to get to Valentina Shevchenko. Real quick thing on that. Lauren Murphy is 36 years of age. And she has won 4 of 5. So remember, the season didn't go well for her, but she did win in the finale against Bob Honchak, who was considered the number one going into that season. This was back in 2017. Then she dropped one to Sajara Eubanks, and then now she's won 3 in a row, including Roxanne Modafferi, Andrea Lee, and Mara Romero Barella. So all decent fighters. On the Jillian Robertson side, she's only 25 years of age. She, since fighting in that finale, has gone, let's see, she's won 3 of 4, and she's won 5 and 2 since that season. So she's doing all right too, man. Good for both of them. I just wanted to put it a little bit in context with what's happening in that division. That division is basically Valentina Shevchenko, and then I think most people can name like 2 others. There's Jessica I and Caitlin Chukay. And the only reason you know is because you just think about the last 2 people that Valentina embarrassed, you know. And anyway, Marc-Andre Barrio got the win. Tisha Torres, boy, her back was to the wall. Goes.
Mm-hmm.
What did they say when they we said she might have a chip on her shoulder? Remember when the fight was announced? Did it say what was the opposite of surging or streaking? Tisha Torres, like
sinking?
No, maybe something like that. Sinking Torres gets last fight. Remember there was a
on Junkie?
Yeah, that was a headline that we saw where we were like, ah, man, it wasn't really vicious.
I don't know what the word was, but yeah,
yeah, the word was one of those like. Like, if I'm her, I read that, I'd be like, bitch. Anyway, she started off 10-1, and now she was 10-5 going into this. She needed that win. Look, she's popular. She's Raquel's partner. Those two are probably two of Dana White's favorites. She's a formidable young lady who, during her time as a fighter, has actually finished her master's degree. Like, she's very, very impressive when you talk to her. Sweet girl, too. We met her in the studio. But you can't go 0-4, much less 0-5. But that performance, finally, in fact, I said it even before the fight, she just seems to have a repetitive game plan. And the last thing, and she loves to stand, but she doesn't seem to have the big KO power. Now, a KO didn't take place. But she was throwing, finally goes, with some ferocity. And, like, she was landing a few where I think she got Brianna Van Buren to definitely back off. She definitely hurt her.
Mm-hmm. She's throwing differently. You know, she's known for that little, I mean, that's why they call it the tornado, the tiny tornado, because she's got that little Vanderlei style. But she was throwing a lot of straight punches, and I think it really caught her opponent off guard.
Mm-hmm. She had started off 10-1, like I mentioned. Her only loss was to Nama Yunus, but she had also beaten Nama Yunus. So she was... She was off to a good start. I remember her season. I remember thinking that was my early pick to win the whole thing. Anyway, Bobby Green got the best of Clay Guida, two veterans of the sport. I don't know if I said it like this, but I really felt like the loser might be done in the UFC. Bobby Green had a two-fight losing streak going into this fight. Prior to that, he had a win and a draw. And then prior to that, he had three straight losses. But, you know, as these guys start to make a little bit more money, and if they're not fighting frequently or if they're not making their mark, sometimes it's just time for you to go. In Clay Guida's spot, he's uber popular. He just registers with the fans. He may always have a spot as long as he wants. But to be fair, he had lost two of his last three. So now it's three of his last four, if you include the Green win. Remember the Miller loss was so quick. The Jim Miller loss, it was a guillotine choke 1 minute in. The one win sprinkled amongst the three losses in that four-fight run was the BJ Penn. And BJ's just not what he was. So that's why there's not too much stock raised in that win at that point. Then you go to Oliveira. He got submitted there in Chicago. That's his hometown. That was in 1 minute, too. That's why I felt like, you know, hey, once these guys get up there and they're making a lot, you know, I don't know how long they keep you around. You know, Guida's 38. So he's given us some classics back in the day. But anyway, hopefully he gets another one. What can I say? I love that slap that his brother gives him. Jim Miller, we just talked about him. He defeated Roosevelt Roberts. That guy just doesn't stop. That's 35 fights he's had.
That's crazy. In the UFC. That is
crazy. Ty Cerrone.
Every time you want to count that dude out, he's like an alligator.
Lyme disease he has.
Mm-hmm.
36 years of age. I mean, and such a nice guy, too. He's won three of his last four. His only loss was to Scott Holtzman. Before that, he went 1-1. You know, he had a win over Alex White, lost to Charles Oliveira. Now, before that, he had a four-fight losing streak. Killers, Hooker, Trinaldo, Pettis, and Poirier. Before that, he had a three-fight win streak. Decent names. Alves, Lozon, and Gomi. So, he's had an up and down, man. But I guess he's always ready to fight, you know. And so, the UFC really, really loves him. So, congrats to him. And he got a bonus. Man, doesn't get any better than that. In the really, really stacked welterweight division, Bilal Muhammad defeated Lyman Good.
Great fight.
It was a great fight.
Great fight. But you had reasons to cheer for both guys. You know, you see what Bilal Muhammad... what his family's gone through. You've seen what Lyman Good has gone through personally. Mm-hmm. There was reasons to cheer for both guys. They both tugged on your heartstrings and they went at it.
I was cheering for Muhammad because I bet on him. But I thought my goose might be cooked because Lyman Good was just stonking and throwing hard. And Muhammad had good movement. And the commentators, this time it was Bisping, Cruz, and Anik, they were noting how what's helping Muhammad is just he's not stationary. Now, can he do that for the whole 15? Apparently he could, man. Good for him. And he had some really, really nice takedowns, though Good was able to get back from a couple of those. But it was his technique was really great, man. Muhammad, and he gets to work with Askren and Woodley when they're around over there at Duke Rufus's gym. Pennington defeated Marion Renault. You know, it was actually a pretty fun fight, even though it went to a decision.
Yeah, they went at it.
Yeah, they did.
I was kind of frustrated, though, because I was looking at Pennington and I was thinking, why couldn't you fight Holly Holm this exact same way? Like, she was really, really pushing it. You could tell. I don't want to say there was desperation on her part, but you could tell she was in a tough situation. She needed to win, and she pushed a little bit harder in this fight. And it was fun to watch. And I think Renault fought back as best she could. I feel like that's the type of fight where if they fought 10 times, it's not gonna go Pennington's way every single time. It was competitive.
You're right. She had lost 3 of 4 coming in. She was 10-8 overall. She's beloved by Dana White. She's got to be one of his favorites. He talks about her a lot. She had a 4-fight win streak going into the Amanda Nunes fight, so she deserved her title shot. She lost the title shot in round 5. Remember, that was kind of had a controversial one as far as, like, should she keep going? You know, going back to the whole Rajkov conversation. But since then, after that, she lost to Jermaine, beat Irene Aldana, lost to Holly Holm, and now beat Marion Renault. So she'll get another fight. Both her and Tisha Torres won, so good for them. But you know what's funny is I look at this Irene Aldana fight. She won it by split decision. If she had lost it, she would have had a 4-fight losing streak going into the Marion Renault fight. And Irene Aldana goes, if she hadn't lost that, she'd have a 6-fight win streak. And then Amanda Nunes wouldn't be able to go, I got no one to fight. You know what I mean? Because it's still impressive. She's won 5 of 6, 2 in a row. But that one little loss has stopped her from being able to brag about a 6-fight losing streak, all because of a split decision. Let's finish up here with Josh Emmett and Shane Burgos. Where do you begin?
I kind of want to just sit back and watch it all over again. I mean, those two were throwing every type of attack you could possibly think of in that fight. I mean, what a great, great fight. And I have a feeling this isn't going to be the last time we see these two fight. I think down the road we could see him do it again.
Had a little bit of a Stout Fisher feel to it, right? A
little bit. I don't know how they could stand after all that.
Me neither. They, folks, it's like two guys that bumped cars on the street. And you ever see those videos where you go, hey, look what's happening over here. And one guy goes to his trunk and pulls out a bat, and the other guy pulls out a tire iron. And they just start swinging it at each other, you know. And then everyone around in the other cars are, all you can hear is, ooh, oh, shit. No, he didn't. Oh, call 911. I mean, it was violent, folks.
Was it the best fight of the COVID era?
No, you know, fans. I don't want to just jump on and go, fuck, yeah. And then you go, oh, what about in Jacksonville? Because I can't remember them all, but I think so.
Yeah.
Or at least, yeah. I mean, if I get a chance to scan back real quick and report back on Thursday's show, I'm pretty sure it could hold up.
Do you think the UFC should do a bonus for, like, fight of the year or something? That'd be interesting.
Yeah, you know, just send each guy a car.
For fight of the year?
Yeah. That'd be cool if both guys.
It'd be interesting.
I mean, do they do it or do they let the World MMA Awards dictate
it?
No,
I think they do it. Because if fans vote, then
I'd love to see both guys standing, like, next to a, what's that car you like? The Land Rover, the Range Rover?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of with their keys around Christmas time. Hey, thanks, Dana White. You know, I spilled a little bit of blood, but.
But it's got to be more than a car, though, right? Well, it depends what car, though. Because a regular bonus is 50 grand, right?
Yeah.
So I'd say if you got fight of the year, it's got to be a lot. 200 grand,
like a Lexus, or
I don't know.
Oh, I mean, you want to send these guys like some sort of money.
I mean, the car thing is Corvette. Pretty cool. Yeah, that'd be dope.
I mean, yeah, the more the merrier. Yeah, that's for sure. But I don't know. I mean, that's where all of a sudden I don't know if you'll get those guys to do it. You know, the UFC is trying to, I think, cover up for the other stuff that's not working at Endeavor. I think the UFC definitely is making money even now. During COVID-19 era, I think they're still doing well in different spots. Remember, they grew UFC Fight Pass. They got that big ESPN deal. I think Reebok's about to finish, and Nike or Under Armour's about to slip in. Their sponsorships, I'll never say they've killed it there. Don't we still see Mickey's or something? Like, don't you still see Toyota a few of tires. Them where you're like, you know, like those? I mean, like, I don't know. You watch Manchester United and you see like Hublot watches, Chevrolet, you know, I mean, like actual Fortune 500. And in the UFC, you'll see some pretty cool stuff, but it's like a movie premiere or something else. Like, I think someone needs to dial in some big, big sponsorships, you know, and the UFC needs to sell them and then go, and tell you what, Conor McGregor will be at that grand opening. I don't know.
It's weird because if you see the big boxing matches, like just seeing like Corona or something on the
Burger
on
the King,
and that's it. You know, like they must give a lot of money to have that one feature spot.
Definitely. I mean, Modelo's big. Modelo's part of Corona, right? I think Corona owns Modelo or something like that.
I don't know.
Oh. All right. So listen, folks, watch Burgos and Emmett. You'll love it. Watch it with a buddy who hasn't seen it and just feed off of them. The only thing I didn't like was at the end, I thought the fight was still winnable for Burgos, but he was just letting Emmett get shots in. And that's because his hands weren't in. He was taunting him. And who knows if that made the difference. He had the reach advantage. He was also kicking him in the calves, and Josh Emmett apparently may have had a severe knee injury. We're hearing maybe a possible ACL tear.
That's how he described
so
it.
So literally, stability. I think Burgos is going to look back and go, I'm somebody. What the fuck? You know, like $50,000, cool for fight of the night, but I lost. And that's his second loss. You know, first one was to Calvin Kattar. Now this is to Josh Emmett. If you look at the records, Burgos in the UFC alone was 6-1 going in. Imagine to get to 7-1 and your only loss is Calvin Kattar, who didn't finish you, by the way. Oh, no, yeah, he did. He finished him late in round three. That would be pretty impressive. You know, he would just continue to keep climbing. But let's talk about Josh Emmett. Otherwise, we'll never be able to get him on the show. Josh Emmett is saying, hey, stop doubting me, enough. You know, I'm for real. He says, I'm going to stop doing media with some of you fools. As soon as he said it, I started turning red because I thought, man, I'm pretty sure I didn't take him in the snap picks. He came out and won two in a row, lost to Desmond Green, then won two more in a row, Arantes and Lamas, then lost to Jeremy Stevens, and then since then he's beaten Michael Johnson, Mirsad Bektik, and Shane Burgos.
I mean, I think I might be one of those guys too that I think he's burned me before on a couple picks, and so he's just, he's a good fighter. When he's on, he's great. But sometimes he just gives you that performance where you're like, I can't really figure out where this guy's at. So, I don't know. I mean, I'd like to talk to him again. Hopefully he'll talk to us. But I think we both picked against him. And I want to say I might have picked against him in his last couple. I might be one of the main guys he's talking about if you look at staff picks.
Yeah. Well, he was impressive. I can't deny him. That dude hits hard. He keeps coming after you, and you can't question his toughness.
He's one of the hardest hitters in that division for sure.
We'll have to wait and see what his injury is, and hopefully it's not serious. Hopefully it's a sprain. He was getting hit on the calf. A, that just sucks alone. But B, he had it looked like he did suffer a knee injury like 15 seconds in. So we wish him the best. And, of course, the main event, Curtis Blaydes defeated Alexander Volkov. Why don't I let you lead off on this one? What were your thoughts on that fight and then everything that came after it and will still be either yet to come or maybe won't come for the winner, Curtis Blaydes?
I mean, he told us going in exactly the type of fight he was going to fight, and I think we'd all be stupid if we thought he was going to do something else. It shocks me how many people are so critical of the way he fights. I mean, they put him in that main event. The way the matchup was built, you knew that he had to fight that way. It's not like he does it every fight he uses his wrestling, which is, if I'm his coach, that's what I'm telling him to do. But he also strikes, you know, and yeah, he got tired towards the end. But I'm going to let that pass. And in the era that we're in right now, I mean, he still crossed the finish line. He still won a dominant performance over a very good fighter. I think if that had a round six, he might be in trouble. But
I thought he was going to die in the post-fight interview.
Yeah, he was hurting really, really bad. But as far as like not being able to talk shit or whatever, like, dude, guy's winning, man. What do you want from him? I mean, he's winning. If you have a problem with his style, then I don't understand why you're putting him in that situation. But I don't know that he has. I don't know that anyone outside maybe three people in the UFC can ever sit back and go, I'm next. I know that shot's mine. Like, especially if the UFC's coming down on you for the way you fight, you know, not doing media, stuff like that. Like, you're just not going to be one of their favorites. And he's in a situation right now with that heavyweight division where he's got the two losses to Ngannou. The belt is tied up right now. I don't see a scenario where he doesn't take another fight before and let all this play out. Otherwise, he's going to be sitting on the sidelines for a while, I think.
I agree. It's the 15th is Miocic versus Cormier. Let's just say it ends decisively. I'm not going to throw the scenario. What if it's a draw? Because it's 1-1 right now. One guy wins. Let's say Miocic wins. Well, then I think it's Miocic versus Ngannou too. Let's say Cormier wins. Well, then I think it's... I mean, what do you do? Oh, Miocic lost. We're still shoving him in there because it's vacant now against Ngannou. I mean, he might have the case because he might say you're shoving someone in there who I beat. Because remember, Cormier would have retired. Or do you go Ngannou versus Blades 3? No, not after that performance. You could tell Dana White's not happy. You know, I don't know. But more than likely, Miocic, if he wins, will fight Ngannou. And that's just the soonest I could see that is December or January. Therefore, and we're in June. And then let's say in January, whoever wins fights 3 months later. That's April. I mean, that's 10 months away. He's going to have to take another fight.
Got it.
Yeah. And he needs Ngannou to lose because as long as Ngannou's either winning or, you know, it's going to be tough to get the second shot, third shot, even when he's champ. And it's going to be tough to get ahead of him while they're both winning, regardless of what else is happening. Alexander Volkov didn't look bad. You could tell he worked on his wrestling. Curtis Blaydes is just a tough, tough dude to fight. He's so committed to his wrestling. And I think Alexander Volkov, I think, can gain a lot from that matchup. It's just a tough, tough matchup for him. So what are you going to do? Dana White was definitely critical. And he said Blaydes had talked some shit. But the title, man. White to Blaydes after win. You look stupid. Now that title right there, I'm like, holy cow.
That'd be tough for two friends to say to each other, let alone, you know, an employer, an employee.
Right. The rest of it is you look stupid after failing to back up talk in UFC on ESPN. Win, 11 win. But Chunky, it just says you look stupid. It had over 100,000 shares. So that story definitely blew up. He said, I like Curtis Blaydes, but Curtis Blaydes has the wrong attitude as far as I'm concerned. I don't have anything against the kid at all. But when you talk shit like he did this week, you better come in and whoop somebody's ass when you talk shit like that. When you talk the shit that he did and perform like he did tonight, you look stupid. Yeah, he won. He talked a lot of shit coming in this week. Wait, we put the same. Okay. I'll have to let the editorial know about that. Anyway, did he say something about the promotion too?
About fighter pay? No? Yeah. Wasn't he one of those guys that spoke out a little bit?
I think that's more of what White is pissed about. Not that he's... Remember there was a tweet that said, if y'all are thinking that this is going to win, blah, 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 whatever. Mm-hmm.
And they showed that to their credit.
He basically said, I'm going to do what I do, which is take someone down and smash them. You know? Mm-hmm. And he was doing it for a while. He just couldn't... It wasn't beautiful because he was so stuck on certain dominant positions, but there was no advancement, and that's where I credit Volkov. And a couple times Herb Dean said, all right, we got to stand back up. So, and also, when you imagine being, how can I put this? Imagine being the model that walks the runway after Gisele Bündchen. And let's just say you're really not known for your striking looks. You just have a good body, you know. Maybe you have a butter face or whatever, and you got to go after her. Imagine being the quarterback for the Patriots this year. You know, that's what these guys were doing coming in as Emmett and Burgos were leaving. Those two are walking and going, how do we top that? You know,
I wouldn't want to be in that position.
Yeah. So it was a fun night. It was a weird night, but it was a fun night. Lots happened. We did our best there to recap it for you guys. As I do with all of these, I'm going to see if I can catch Goes off guard. Goes real quick. Gate and attendance for Saturday night.
Oh, easy peasy. That was zero.
Mm-hmm. Which one, though?
I was talking about the Trump rally. Are we talking about the fight? Yeah.
It was 6200.
Oh.
They're expecting 19000.
Sorry, I had to take that burn. Come on, guys.
Yeah. Zero attendance, zero gate is what it's at, folks. This weekend is Dustin Poirier versus Dan Hooker. You'll see our picks on the front page of MMAJunkie.com, so you'll know where we stand. But is there anything you want to say on that card, Goes, now that you have this format?
On the Poirier-Hooker card?
Yeah. Or just either the card or the fight itself, the main event.
Oh, the main event's awesome. It's going to be so good. I can't wait to see that fight. Yeah, that one's going to be fun because both guys' styles don't allow for it to be a boring fight. It's going to be really, really fun, and it's going to come down to a big gut check for both of those guys because they both have great skills.
We also got Mike Perry versus Mickey Gall.
That Mickey Gall better get him down quick or something because they definitely can't be exchanging on the feet.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And then after that, folks, we have a week off, and all the fights will start taking place at Yas Island in Abu Dhabi, including UFC 250. What are we at? 251. That has three title fights. Usman defends, Volkanovski defends, and then the title left vacant by Henry Cejudo will be filled either by Peter Yan or Jose Aldo, unless they pull a Figueiredo Benavidez. Remember, those guys were supposed to, one of them was supposed to become a champ, and Figueiredo won but didn't make weight. So they're running it back, and they're running it back a week later. So we're even creeping up on that one, too. So Dana's not lying when he says there's a lot happening, you know, in the coming month of July. No international fight week here in Las Vegas. That's been postponed till the fall. Along with that comes the Hall of Fame, the World MMA Awards. The World MMA Awards isn't affiliated with the UFC, but they've kind of piggybacked that whole week. And then the UFC used to go three cards deep. I don't think they were going to go two cards deep, but still, they do a lot of stuff around town. And just right now, town is not what it was. It's slowly coming back, but we're also slowly having a surge in COVID-19 cases. So everywhere out there, please be careful. Keep wearing that mask is all I can say. Hopefully you enjoyed today's show. We're going to be back on Wednesday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Sportscaster. Go to Sportscaster and you can catch us in the video form. It's sportscaster.com/MMAJunkie. There's no E in caster, so it's sportscaster.com/MMAJunkie. And then, of course, we'll be back on Thursday with another episode. So until then, go out there and be a champion.